When we arrived at the San Francisco airport at 3 p.m., we were met by Captain Mitchell, Dr. Wilbur Franklin, Dr. Hal Puthoff, and Mr. Russell Targ. I had forewarned them by phone that Uri was not going to cooperate in the scientific work but that he wanted to explain it to them in person. As soon as we got in the car, Uri began to tell them his story. I had no idea what he was going to say. He talked for 2 hours while we listened without comment. I will summarize what he said. Uri told them that it had never been his wish to give himself to science, that that was my idea. The reason was that he did not want people to know that his powers were genuine. He preferred to keep them guessing so that they would not take him seriously. He claimed that by being controversial he had remained successful in Israel. If someone got the idea that he was genuine, it would complicate his life. He told of being approached in Rome by an unsavory character, in Tel Aviv by a Russian agent, etc. He was afraid of these political things. Then he told the story of my recent experience with the terrorist in London. I must confess that he got overly dramatic about the potential dangers to his life if people knew his powers were genuine. I think that everyone else felt the same way, but they listened with tolerance. Then Uri shocked me by suddenly talking about us and about extraterrestrial intelligences as being the source of his powers. He turned to me for confirmation, but since I had not been released from my pledge of secrecy, I could only say no comment. Uri said, "So you see, I cannot give myself to science for my personal reasons and because the intelligence that directs me does not want me to do it. I have no choice because they direct me. I can't go against that advice. Bad things happen if I go against that advice." The talk of extraterrestrials did not appear to shock Mitchell, Franklin, Doug, or Puthoff. But they were clinically curious as to Uri's experiences and asked him questions as follows. Dr. Franklin queried, "Are you saying that your life is not your own? That you cannot go where you want to go?" Dr. Puthoff asked, "Have you agreed to work with this power?" Uri replied, "I have worked with these beings for over a year now. I have very little choice, they direct me." "He can go where he wants to go," interjected Captain Mitchell. "I can go where I want to go. I am leading my life," replied Uri. "Then I don't know what you are saying," persisted Dr. Franklin. "What do you mean?" said Uri. Everyone pitched in to clarify the issue. Was it a governing director? Was it a psychic force? Was it merely a pressure to go in a certain direction, rather than a command? Did it only veto certain things? Uri replied, "Well, it doesn't tell me to go to the kitchen now, to eat an apple or not to eat an apple. But if I do go to the kitchen, I really can't explain whether it's me or not me who wants to get the apple. Assume that it's me, unless there's a very heavy pressure not to do it. Listen, I am in a situation that if I really were to ask that being, I could right now be in a different place. I could right now be in London, but my body would be here. I could read a letter in somebody's house in London, if I really ask the being. I just have to wish for something. But I can't bring here $1 million, you understand? I did that. I asked that being to make me money. But then I get hit from something else. I'm not allowed to wish for things like that. I'm not sure I can understand that." "But can you govern your own future?" asked Dr. Franklin. "I don't know what's going to happen with me," Uri replied very soberly. "Do you know what criteria they use if you should or shouldn't do some particular thing?" Dr. Puthoff asked. "Do you know ahead of time what their goals are?" he added. "No," replied Uri. "You see, they're computers, which were fed millions of light years in the future. Do you understand? They're computers, and their data are arriving at me in what I call my time, but they are in a different time zone completely. That means if I decide to do something, they decide it for me in the future. That means that if Andrea's car key appears now inside of a plastic carrot bag, it actually was planned hundreds, thousands of years in the future. It had to happen. And it happened. But if an accident happens, that I can't understand. Because they also tell me that I must take care of myself. For a while, I was living as if nothing could happen to me. Now I know I'm vulnerable. I really thought I was guarded against all possible danger. But lately I see that bad things can happen to me. That means that somehow the computers are on my body, but if something on the side happens that is not on their time, they cannot control it. Let me show you something. You see, now I don't know if I am showing it, or they are showing it. Captain Mitchell interjected, it doesn't really matter. I want to show you for 20 minutes the little things I do. Then I will go up to the bigger things. Captain Mitchell said, Yuri, you're not saying anything to us we don't in some way already sense or understand. All right, that's very good. That's a good step, replied Uri. I must warn you now. The things I know, that's reality. With these few words I knew that a bond of understanding had been forged between Uri and the scientists. Yuri was now in the mood to show his powers to them in this informal social setting in this apartment at 9303 Middlefield Road, Palo Alto. I awaited a sign to see if Iz would enter into or stay away from Uri's demonstration. Yuri then did 5 tests of telepathy using either numbers or drawings. He was correct in 4 out of 5 tries. He then asked for some metal objects. Dr. Puthoff took out a machined copper ring, a fork, and his silver chain bracelet, which Uri briefly touched. Dr. Puthoff put his hand over these 3 objects. Yuri placed his hand over Dr. Puthoff's hand. Dr. Puthoff removed his hand after Uri had concentrated on the objects for some 30 seconds. The copper ring had gone from a circle to an egg shape. Every scientist present said the same thing, incredible. Yuri simply stated, it was not my body that did it. It was a power above me. Russ Targ asked, is the power happy about having this happen? Yuri replied, this power can't be happy, it doesn't have feelings. It is a computer. It knows if it was good or bad, I believe. Yuri then asked for Russ Targ's watch. He set the hands to 12 o'clock, and he asked Russ to hold his hand over the watch. He then asked someone to pick a number from 1 to 12. Yuri was trying to have the watch hands move to the hour requested. He failed twice in a row to do this. This made him unhappy. I'm angry it didn't go. But I hope that in the 2 or 3 days we spend together socially you may see some big things, if they allow it. But I won't work in the laboratory. What they really want, we don't know. Dr. Puthoff asked me in an aside, does he have to cooperate with UFOs, is that what he is saying? My reply, I can't talk. My lips are sealed. Hearing this, Yuri said, they gain their force from the rotation of our galaxy. Isn't that right, Andrea? I don't know anything. You are talking, not me, I replied. Yuri was both annoyed and amused at me as he said, you see, you think that I am not allowed to say this, huh? I am not saying anything, I said a bit grimly. Yuri looked around and said to all, look how he is against it. Captain Mitchell spoke for the group when he replied, no, he's just being a proper skeptical scientist. I simply did not understand how Uri could feel so free in revealing secrets that we had agreed to keep. To my knowledge, there had been no release from this pledge, in spite of what had been allowed in the writing of a book or a movie script. His attitude was all the more curious, since he was generally so conscious of security and secrecy. Was this Uri, or was it Iz at work now? There had still been no clear sign. Dr. Franklin broke the silence, but how do you know these things? Do you hear it, see it, or just know it? Yuri said, I think I hear it. But I don't believe it. So I ask for a proof, a sign. Sometimes I see it on my mind's screen. There are some other ways, too. I don't know why I am telling you all these things. Dr. Puthoff asked, are those forces associated with beings, live beings, or are they all programmed into a computer? All in a computer, but I suspect that a being did it somewhere, sometime. The beings are not there. Because I only get what is planned, I can't ask for new things. Also, there are different units out there. Russell asked, do you feel you are more in control as time goes on? Yes, said Uri. Please put some glasses of water on the table. These were brought and put on the table. Please everyone, be quiet now, Uri asked. I am asking for a sign now. Everyone was quiet. The tape recorder was running, and alert to anything that might happen. We waited. At 8:01 p.m. a bell rang. The automatic ESP test machine bell had rung, registering a hit. Russell Tug, who had designed this instrument, said, "It's never done that before." Shortly thereafter, we examined the copper ring on the table. It had become even more flattened, going from the egg shape to a dumbbell shape. I had the feeling that this was a sign, but I needed more evidence before I could be sure. Russ Tug asked Turi, "Do you feel that the bell and the ring are signs that they are favorably inclined toward what we are doing?" "First of all, let me tell you. They are tuned toward us, me, Shippy, and Andrea, every second of our lives. They're tuned, every second. We can't escape from that. Whatever we think, they answer to that. Whatever we ask, talk, they interrupt if necessary. So I don't know for sure now whether that was the sign. I'm going to tell you the craziest thing. Listen to me. We were flying from New York to Munich on September 1st this year. The plane was about 15 minutes out of New York. There were clear blue skies. About 4:30 p.m. I looked out of the window and I said to them, 'Please, just for once, give me a sign, not little things, please appear before me now.' And I swear to you on my mother, and Shippy would swear on his mother, they came from the right side of the jumbo jet. I'm not going to tell you a flying saucer came, but a black object came flying, zooming, no smoke came out. I said, 'Shippy, look. It was round.' He saw it, I saw it. Then it passed, it disappeared. Now we landed in Amsterdam. I went to the captain and asked him if there was any object flying to the right of the plane 15 minutes out of New York. He said, 'No.' I said, 'Please listen to me,' and asked him again, just to be sure. This was a proof to me that they cling to every thought of mine. I tell everyone I was born with these powers, but I wasn't born with them. No. What happened to me was when I was 3 years old. Andrea, I am doing the right thing, okay? Then I realized I had these powers. They were given to me then." Puthoff asked, "A very specific event?" "Yes," said Uri. "I won't talk about it. I'll never forget it. But I didn't really know it until I met Andrea. Before that I was always trying to prove it and to figure it out. There were times when I thought I was going mad with my powers. Sometimes I revolted against myself. Are you with me?" Everyone nodded assent. Yuri went on, "Why? For what? Things, one thing is going to happen for sure. Then people will know we are not mad. Do you know when the event will happen?" Dr. Puthoff asked. "In a few years," Yuri replied. "It will happen. Things are going badly." Suddenly a copper ring fell to the floor, under the table around which we were sitting. "Where did that ring come flying from?" asked Tug. "I thought it was underneath the table," said Dr. Franklin. Yuri said, "No, it was right there by Hal Puthoff." "It was, a little while ago," said Captain Mitchell. "It fell right by my toe, underneath the table. I felt the impact." Yuri took me aside and said, "Am I blabbering off my mouth? Am I saying the right things?" "Yuri, I feel that you are saying exactly what you are permitted to say. The bell going off and the ring going through the table convinced me. I'll give you more support from now on." We returned to the table around which we had been sitting. Yuri said he wanted one more sign. He asked if he could hold Hal Puthoff's silver chain bracelet in his hand. Then he requested Hal to hold the bracelet in his own hand. Yuri concentrated for a few seconds. The chain broke in two. Inspection proved that one of the heavy links had vanished. Dr. Puthoff was the first to observe that the copper ring had now assumed the shape of the mathematical symbol for infinity. By 9 p.m. we had been together for 6 intense hours. We had met with the purpose of bringing about an amicable divorce, and now we were reaching a point where a scientific enterprise seemed about to be born. There was a relaxed, expectant atmosphere in the room. Russell Tug reiterated what Captain Mitchell had said before our meeting began. "What we are doing here could be as important as Sputnik." Captain Mitchell said, "Yuri, however much you may feel you have been directed, I feel we have all been directed. We have all converged." "Let's go higher," said Uri. Andrea, Shippy, and I know. I am at the head, a generator, they are batteries. All that is happening has one reason, education, they are preparing us for something. Everything they do is an education for us. Flowers bloom from a bud in a second in my hand. Things disappear. This is the difficult part. But we do not talk about these are things. People get fearful. Yuri paused for a long time before continuing. First of all, when I got here today, I thought I couldn't tell you anything. Now I feel everything is open and possible. Then the forces we deal with seem funny at times. They joke and I think they are not serious. This is hard for me to understand. Then they are not consistent, they seem to change their minds. Sometimes Andrea and I think that they are playing jokes with us. Now, how did I get out of Israel? I was about 20 miles out of Tel Aviv. There was Shippy, me, Andrea, and two girls. We were trying out a new walkie-talkie. It was February 11th of this year. They said, "We're over West Germany now, things don't look so good down there." That was all. That afternoon Andrea received a phone call in which a voice said, "Spaceman over West Germany." The next day I ran into a singer friend who said her manager in Germany would like to have me work in Germany. Then we got orders from these beings to go to Germany when an airline ticket materialized for me. Andrea found the man in Germany to manage me. I was there for 5 months, and nothing really happened there. I felt I was being used there all the time by them, but I never knew the reason. They are somehow using our energy for their use. We are being used somehow. Sometimes I have the worst headaches and I am not doing anything, just resting. But that's not it. Then the work was finished, and I had to go to America. That's why I think they are changing their minds. Did you ever think that it may have been just to get you out of Israel? Asked Captain Mitchell. Well, they tell us, don't ask us how they tell us. Andrea knows that my powers had to be validated. He had an idea it should be done through science. Then there was a movie to be done on me. And boy, I like the idea of doing a movie about me. That's great. Melanie worked for 3 months on a movie script. It was a beautiful script. Then cut, they suddenly said, no movie. I was crushed. Andrea and Melanie were disappointed. They don't have feelings, but they control my feelings. They put us through heavy tests all the time. I suppose you are all being tested. I guess we must be purified. Sometimes these tests have to do with women, you go way down in your feelings. Then you pass and you go high. Once we were in debt and we asked for money, all we got were things falling from the roof on our heads. I hope you all remember what we are hearing. The Earth people, if they are put together in masses, are building an energy that they use. I know how it was in Israel. When I performed, you could hear a pin drop. I could feel something was happening to people, an energy was being used. I don't know what they want from me now. They are jumping from one thing to the other. I have to follow it, I can't say no. I like adventures, but sometimes this tires me. I could tell you a series of events that is analogous to what you are talking about, said Captain Mitchell. The effort I have been putting together in research has had the same ups and downs as you're describing. And for absolutely no reason, about 6 or 7 times in the last 3 months my efforts would go counter to any rational outcome. Yuri went on, in the past few months, hundreds of strange things have been done by the powers. When I got to Germany, I got instructions on a tape, from a clear slow-motion voice, but it was a mechanical voice. After we heard the tape, it vanished before our eyes. They use every known communication means to reach us. I was supposed to contact a certain man by these instructions in Hamburg. The next day I got a show in Hamburg. A man came up to me and said, "I'm Werner Schmid, you flipped me. I wrote a musical about a man just like you. I need you." It got so serious that Andrea had to come to Germany. For Schmid, I was getting signs 40 to 50 times a day, things like objects appearing, a flower bud blooming in my hand, and so on. How do you know that wasn't just a man, a lot of coincidences, and not those powers? Asked Mitchell. It may not be as directed as you think. Well, I check it. I took a spoon in my hand and asked it to bend and melt in my hand, if he is the right man. I did it and it bent. That's the only way I can be sure it's not a coincidence. I know one thing that bothers me right now. Why am I not allowed to validate myself by science? Of course, nobody but Uri and I fully understood what was meant by this question. As soon as Uri raised this question, my trusty TC-120 tape recorder stopped running. The cassette would not turn. A few minutes later it began to run all by itself, without my doing anything, Russell responded to Uri's question. I thought the signs were very positive earlier when you were asking questions. I think there is a difference between his showing you what he can do, and being publicly and scientifically validated, I tried to explain. But he did that in Germany before large crowds. Did he not? Asked Dr. Franklin. Yes, but that's show business, I said. We couldn't have a better situation for experimentation than that SRI, said Dr. Puthoff. Dr. Franklin said, you know everybody I have met who is in charge here at SRI has Promethean views. Do you know what I mean by that? No, what does Promethean mean? Asked Uri. Dr. Franklin replied, Prometheus brought fire from Zeus. He brought fire from the gods to man. Uri, let me explain, I interjected. The gods had fire, and this fellow Prometheus said, look, man is cold. He could use fire. How come you don't give it to him? They said no. He went ahead and stole the fire in order to help man. The gods got angry and punished Prometheus by hanging him on the side of a mountain in the Caucasus. And every day a big vulture would come and eat out a piece of his liver. He would recover, the vulture then would eat more. They would not let him die, and they would not let him live. This means that a man who sticks up for his ideas, in spite of what the gods say, takes a beating. Russell said, well, Gary Feinberg wrote a book called The Prometheus Project in which he says that psychical effects may be pivotal in our understanding of man. Uri went on, you see, those computers form a network that monitors the universe. These collect into centers which control those below. Then those are under the control of still higher powers. Hal Puthoff said, I've heard Andrea describe your powers of making things disappear. Suppose only half an object disappears. Can you use that as a tracer into another dimension? Uri replied, I never tried that. Things have never happened halfway like that, it's all or nothing. But I know one thing, there is one place where there is a hole, and I must find the place. And if I find that place, then I am in a different world. There is some place a leak, a hole I can slip through. But they have not showed it to me yet. I don't have to walk to it. I can bring it to me and go through it. Even if my body remains here. But my body might also disappear. I am afraid of that, I could disappear from here. Captain Mitchell said amusedly, we were going to ask you to do it to one of us. Uri hastened to reply, I am not allowed to do this to anyone else. I wouldn't do it to you. For us it would be a loss, for them it wouldn't. Listen, when I went, and it happened to me only twice in my life. Listen to what happened. The first time, we were in Israel. I was driving the car, and Andrea was giving the instructions where to go. And my girlfriend was with me. Andrea doesn't know Tel Aviv, and he was telling me to go out of Tel Aviv. Where? I said. Drive, he said. We were going out to the suburbs about 15 kilometers. He said, stop. I stopped near a field. We went in. Some force was pulling us to the center of the field. I think there was a moon, because it seemed so bright. Uri's voice dropped to a hushed whisper, as we hung on his words. First we followed a sound, like the sound of crickets. There at the end of the field we saw a light shining, bluish, like a strobe light, about 45 meters away. Andrea had his camera and he started shooting. So I went ahead. I was drawn to the thing. I remember everything until I got near it. I don't remember the shape, believe me. All I remember was that something was handed to me. Then I went back, I was completely in a trance. I handed something to Andrea, it was a ballpoint pen that had disappeared a few days earlier under controlled conditions. That's the first time I ever lost time, from my Earth time. Andrea, what happened to the camera? Would you finish that? I shot the roll of film, I said. It vanished out of the camera. The biggest experience of my life, though, was the day before yesterday, was it? It was at the top of Andrea's depression about the research. It was something terrible. It was something awful. Andrea, Sheppy, Melanie, and I were all in the kitchen. You've got to bring them to the point where it happened to me, Andrea. I said, well, I had a dispute with the friends he's talking about. I was challenging them, I suppose. Was that your idea, or did somebody else say that? Asked Russell. I was shocked how Andrea was talking to them, said Uri. It was my idea, I said. Uri was afraid I'd vanish any instant. Then Uri jumped up, saying, you're wrong. And hurled a sugar bowl at me which missed. In 2 seconds, he sat down. In 2 seconds, 3 seconds, I was gone, an hour to me. Said Uri. I know what's time. But I vanished from there. Of course, they saw my body. It was the first time that Andrea shouted at these beings. I'm still shook up from what happened. In those 2 seconds I was gone for 1 hour. Shippy was on my left side, Andrea was on my right. We were walking in a long corridor for half an hour. Nobody can wipe that out from my mind. There were yellow lights all around. It was so real, in these shoes. It was so real, I haven't been able to sleep since then. I entered a round room, through a door, like a light going up. The three of us were there. There was a purple light going around the room from a slit. We went downstairs, and there were three couches there. We sat down, and the couch thing went back. I have marks on my hands from the two knobs. My head went back, then a thing came down before us like a screen with some orange lights. Then a voice came, a mechanical voice, and it said, it's only the beginning. It's only the beginning. It went on and on. In English? Asked Russell. Yes, in English. When I came to, my hand was still in the air from throwing the sugar bowl. For me, it was an hour. They said it was 2 or 3 seconds. What did you say was on your hands? Asked Russ. I touched two balls, which were on the armrests of the couch. I told this to Andrea. There were two round patches on my palms, with three notches on each round patch. When you were walking with Andrea and Sheppy, did you talk? Asked Dr. Franklin. No, replied Uri. But everything that happened is as clear as I am in this room with you. Did it seem like a strange or dangerous place to you? Asked Russell. No, replied Uri. It seemed like a peculiar place. What bothered me was the walk, the long, long walk. I hate walking. This was not a dream. This was real. Uri, what do you make of all this? Asked Russell. When I came back, it feels like I came back from another dimension. It sounds to me like you had an out-of-the-body experience, said Russell. Some of what you experience depends on what you expect. Listen, there's one thing here that divides us. Someone made me do this, said Uri. Uri, something you haven't told us, when we have signs tonight, what makes you think you should not undertake a validation? Asked Russell. Because I still know it. I'm not fighting them. They still tell me no, replied Uri. Here is why I think this is going on. It happened to me in Israel. They don't want me in a laboratory. I don't know why. Well, we're not going to ask Uri to do anything in the lab that he has not done here tonight, commented Dr. Puthoff. I stated quietly, I think other places and other people who could have validated Uri were edited out. They were not the right people. What is important here is to build up a community of fellowship and interest first. Then the validation will follow naturally. Maybe the major event that is coming has something to do with it. Uri asked the scientists, what is validation for you? For us, it is having a clear plexiglass table on which you do your things. The camera shoots what you do. That's validation, replied Dr. Puthoff. Let's say I do it, tomorrow, said Uri. And the camera shoots. And all you saw it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people. You are sure you saw a ring bend? Then nothing comes on the film. You have a fact. Then what would you do? You have a broken ring. Russell replied, I don't believe that would happen. I would consider that a significant experiment, said Dr. Puthoff. Russell pursued the question, I cannot imagine the camera wouldn't run.